Hey, welcome back to Corinth in Your Car. My name's Josh, and I'm here with Luke and Adam. We're glad you're with us for another podcast. Thanks for joining us. Guys, how you doing today? How you feeling?
Doing pretty good.
I'm good.
I've got no complaints, and even if I did have them, no one would want to listen.
It's cool outside, but you got coffee in your hand.
It is so really cool outside, I'm still adjusting. So I know a lot of people were excited about the cold weather. It's a little too chilly for me. I don't like the way it feels when I wake up in the morning.
You know, we burned our first fire in the fireplace.
Wow.
Actually, you know, just probably because we were just more eager to just set the fire, you know,
right. Just
to say we did it. But anyway, Adam, how you feeling?
Not too shabby. I always love it whenever you say, you know, nothing to complain about or whatever, and somebody say, yeah, no, wait, listen anyway.
Yeah.
And
it's one of those things. I always struggle with when someone asks me how I'm doing, the phrase that I say over and over again, and I know it's like the worst. Is living the dream.
Yep.
Living the dream. And yeah. I saw something that just exposed that every time I say it, it's like someone asks you how you're doing, and in your brain, you're just like, don't say it, don't say it, don't say it, don't say it, don't say it. And then it just burst out, living the dream.
Yep, living the dream.
And then I'm always like, oh man, I can't believe I said that again. And so then I come up with a different phrase, and it's like, you know, it's like, somebody's dream. I don't know if it's mine.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever.
I've got to
work on something better. A better response than that, because it's getting to the point to where it just automatically comes out.
You don't want to go to the Woody Wilkerson place?
Yeah, we've talked about
saved,
that before.
Sanctified.
Full of the Holy Spirit, happy and on my way to heaven. Yeah. Something like that. I don't know. Better than I deserve. This is a real thing, though. Like, the most common response, right, is like, how are you doing? It's like, mm-hmm. I'm good.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's like, that is grammatically incorrect.
Ooh, what is
this? No. I'm well.
Yeah. So
Okay.
Here's what my father-in-law says. You say, how are you doing? Or he says, how you doing? You say, I'm good. He goes, no, Superman does good. You are doing well.
Right.
Wow.
So, yeah, there you go.
You want to be real
grammar Nazi.
Yeah. And it's not swell, to visit a word from a previous episode. It's not that one.
This has been a good week. My mom got in town Thursday night, and so lots of fun family time. She lives in Arizona, so we don't see her that often. So our kids were super excited to see Nani. That's what we call her. Saturday was super fun too, because Kroger has this thing a couple weekends a month, I think, called Chef Junior, where you book a 30-minute slot and learn how to cook something. And so she's going back. She went back to back to back on Saturday with each kid and learned how they learned. She already knows. She's a phenomenal cook. But they learned how to make tostadas. And then that evening cooked us tostadas for dinner. So that was a cool memory. And it leads into just kind of what we're talking about today. We'll get into the sermon here in a bit, but we talked about family yesterday from Colossians, and just how our faith is going to, how Paul challenges us to take the theology of what we know and then really live it out in our family. But before we jump into that, let's talk about your family a little bit. So what was, just growing up, maybe a memorable family vacation or road trip? So I said memorable. It could be amazing.
Bad memory.
Or it could be bad. You know, so just memorable somehow. What you got?
I know that my family, most of our vacations usually involved sports, because we were, you know, all of us were involved in some sort of different sport. And so the majority of our vacations were, we got to go up to Dallas for the basketball tournament, got to go up to, you know, Houston for the soccer tournament,
gotcha.
And all that sort of
yeah.
stuff. So we did a lot of that, which was really, really fun. But that, like, limited the, you know, stereotypical family
sure,
vacations
yeah.
that people
uh-huh.
take.
Yep.
So we got to do a few. And the one that I remember the most was right whenever my little brother Wade was born, was at the same time that my cousin Kimberly was graduating high school in Georgia. So that
oh, cool.
my aunt and uncle were living up in Ackworth at the time. And so we loaded up and drove from San Antonio all the way to Ackworth, Georgia.
Long drive
with a baby.
Yeah.
And we did the high school graduation thing. But then we left Wade because he was newborn-ish. Like, I don't know how old he was, but he was like too young to go to the beach, you know? So we left Wade with our Aunt Kathy, and then we drove up to Myrtle Beach. And I remember, cause I was like, I guess if that was like 2003 or 2004, then I was like maybe less than 10 years old.
Mm.
And I remember being so fascinated by the amount of miniature golf courses that were at Myrtle Beach. Like, growing up in San Antonio, there was just like one. There was one mini golf course that everybody went to. And it was a really nice one. But like, then you get to be like 10 years old or less, and you go to this place which seems like the miniature golf capital of the world. We begged our parents to take us mini golfing every single night. It was a lot of fun. But that trip was a lot of fun, because some good memories from that one. There was another thing that occupied a lot of our family trips was by the time that my grandma had passed away, my grandpa remarried his high school sweetheart and moved back home to where he grew up in Independence, Kansas. That was a lot of our family vacations at that point as well, whenever we were just going up to Independence, Kansas to visit him. It was really fun. The first time lots of family went up, and that was really like the first time that we ever got to play in snow.
Oh,
so you don't really get that in San Antonio. And I played
not
in
so
it
so much.
I played in it, and I was content, and I live in Georgia, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, snow's overrated.
It's overrated. There was this one time at Ozark where I was a college student, and so I was broke, and I needed a new pair of jeans, and so I bought a new pair of jeans, and then the next day it iced. And I was walking outside, and I slipped on the ice and fell and ripped open the brand new pair of jeans that I bought. And at that point I was like, I'd be okay to never see ice or snow again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like snow. I don't like ice.
They're two very different things.
Oh yeah,
it's
man.
Bad. Yeah.
Especially black ice that you can't see when you're driving. That's bad. So Adam, any memorable family vacation?
A lot of ours revolved around baseball trips and
going
to baseball stadiums and going to different games. Kansas City, St. Louis, Worlds of Fun, Six Flags in St. Louis. Probably one of the more memorable ones would have been, I think I was like 9 or 10, we went out to Colorado to visit some family friends, and like my dad climbed Pikes Peak.
Yeah.
That's a hike.
That is a hike.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's like a legit hike. And we rode up the mountain.
Uh-huh.
And so I remember that, Royal Gorge and those things. So, yeah. Another great trip was whenever my dad, my grandpa, one of my cousins, and my brother and I, we went out to, it's either Wyoming or Montana, one of those states that's big and a lot of nothing.
Yeah.
The Wild, Wild West.
Yeah, Wild, Wild West. And we camped out, which is not like anything that we normally did, but my grandpa loved doing that, and so we were just out there like legit in a teepee, and that was a lot of fun.
Cool. I remember when I graduated high school, so funny, Luke, you said earlier 2004, so that was my high school graduation year, and okay, so this is the same summer that we were taking a trip, and our whole family loaded up, and I think we were gone for 2 weeks. And we somehow drove through every state west of the Mississippi except North Dakota, I think is how it went, because apparently there's nothing worth seeing in North Dakota, you know. I don't know. But we saw Mount Rushmore, Yellowstone, Yosemite. We saw geysers, you know, in the national parks, and Arches National Parks, and Hoover Dam and the Redwoods, and just really, really fun, really, really fun trip. I also thought this would be fun. We're talking about family and just kind of the interactions between family. So Adam and I are the oldest. We're the older siblings of two. I have a younger sister. You have a younger brother. And then Luke, you're right in the middle of five, right? So I thought it'd be fun to kind of tell some stories on ourselves, maybe some growing up fights that we had with siblings and just how that happened. It's kind of fun.
Man, I've got a lot.
Yeah, so let's keep it to one each.
Okay. So I was the troublemaker in our family of five. And I know that if you're listening to this right now, that just shocks you. You're so surprised.
Did you start hot takes with them at the age of six or something?
Something like that. So, it's two older brothers, two younger brothers. There's a stereotypical middle child stuff. You're fighting for attention. You know, guys, actually, last week, to this day was National Middle Child Day. But everybody forgot about it.
Yeah, nobody noticed.
They didn't know. But I was always the troublemaker, and this is probably the cruelest thing that I ever did to one of my brothers. So my brother Scott and I, we shared a bedroom for like our pretty much our whole life in the house together. And so there was one point where we were on a bunk bed together, and the top bunk was like narrower than the small the bottom bunk. The bottom bunk bed was a little bit bigger. That was Scott's bed, and I was up on the top. And Scott had done something that made me kind of mad. And so I was like, well, what's a way that I could get back at him? And so what I did was I took a pin and I went down to his area of the bed and up against the wall where he slept. And I wrote his name everywhere on the wall. And it was like one of those things where it's like, there's no way that I'm going to get in trouble for this, because when mom and dad find out, they're going to see it was Scott's name on Scott's part of the wall. Like, this is going to be, it didn't, you know.
So like, did it work?
It worked for a minute, you know, all that sort of stuff. But it was just like, man, I was cruel. I did stuff like that all of the time. I was not a very good kid to my brothers. There was one time, I know you said one each, there was another time. This is more like adult life. I was back home from college. I think maybe it was right before I left for college, but I was older. And my little brother Wade, he had a crush on a girl at church. And so we were kind of teasing him about it. And he said, if you don't stop teasing me, I'm going to stab you in the eye with this pencil.
Ooh.
And I didn't believe him. And so we kept teasing him. And then sure enough, he picked up a pencil and he just like straight up, boom, stabbed me right in the eye. Ow. And man, that was painful. I could have ended up blind. And then I was the one that got in trouble for it. So he didn't get a consequence. I got the consequence because I was provoking him.
You did.
Anger. I know.
Yeah, you did.
I know.
You deserve
it. Is what it is. You don't stab a dude in the eye with a pencil. Wade, if you're listening to this one, there is a revenge coming your way.
Unless they deserve it. Point.
So that's me. There's a lot of stories. You can ask me all about what you want to know later.
Yeah,
on.
There you go. Adam, how about you and Andy? Anything jump to your mind?
Yeah, I mean, we fought all the time. I mean, we're like pretty much best friends now.
Sure.
But we fought all the time whenever we were growing up. And so a lot of it's just because we're two competitive alpha males.
There you go. And you're pretty close too, right? Like within 2 years?
3 years.
3 years.
So it's like there's enough of a gap there to where my obvious superiority was always on display. But no, like I remember once we were playing wiffle ball in the front yard, and we didn't have bases. We had like these big old slabs of rock that we used as like first, second, third.
And you would call like Ghosty on first or...
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. So we're playing against each other, and... So Andy's going for, I think, a double. And so he hit the ball, and so I pick up the wiffle ball, and I throw it. And I hit him, and I hit him before he got to the base. But he's like, no, I was safe. And I'm like, no, you're out. And so we're going back and forth. I was like, dude, you're out. And so I turned around and started walking away. He picked up that slab of rock. Like, I'm talking like it was the size of second base.
Yeah.
And he just came up behind me and just clocked me in the back of the head with it. And like, I went down, he went and hid in the neighbor's yard because he was convinced dad was going to murder him.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, dad didn't. So we got into it a lot. And that's probably one of the better ones that we've had.
Yeah,
that's fun. I think I want to pull Andy in on an episode next week and hear that story from his perspective.
Yeah, we can have a phone a friend guest here. Yeah. So I guess I'll tell the one of younger siblings trying to injure me too. So Megan, my younger sister, since you told about Wade and Andy, you know, I forget what even we were fighting about, but we were fighting, and she said this line to me. She goes, "I am so mad at you, I could kick you in the face."
there's a threat.
Yeah. And I was like thinking in my head, there ain't no way she can kick me in the face. That's like my face is high off the ground.
And your sister's short.
And she's short. What I failed to remember is that she also did gymnastics and was like really flexible, really strong. And so I called her out on it and I said, "Go ahead, see what happens." And the next thing I know is a foot was in my face. And then I was just so stunned. I was like, I can't believe you just kicked me in the face. And I couldn't say anything. But, oh, man. Same thing. I remember, you know, just best of friends, but also worst enemies at times. And, you know, love my sister, too. So yeah,
it sounds like the two of you were the angels, whereas I was a little devil. I was the troublemaker, man.
My Grandma Gibson told my mom, this is a true story, because I was such a good kid, you know, as a little kid. My Grandma Gibson told my mom, she said, you know, the reason that the Lord gave you Andy is so that you knew not all kids are like Adam.
Ooh. Wow. Oh, man. When did you find out that story?
I was probably 20-something.
Okay, it's probably good you didn't hear that story.
Yeah, when absolutely. 12. If you heard that when you were like 8, 9, or 10, yeah. You would have needed therapy. Yeah.
I wouldn't have. He would have.
Man, we could talk family all day long, and I've even got a couple more questions, but maybe we'll get back to it at the end, depending on time. Let's, for now, go ahead and just jump into the sermon from Sunday, because once again, we've seen, this is what, part 4 of Colossians, and so the first couple weeks we saw just theology, theology, theology. Last week it started to shift to our practice and our living and our personal lives, and this week just more of that with specifically our family lives. And you know, the difference last week was a lot of verses. This week was only 4, I believe. Mm-hmm. 4 big concepts.
Oh, yeah.
4 big verses. So, Adam, recap us from yesterday, 90 seconds or so. What did we hear?
Oh, yeah. So, we've continued our walk through Colossians. Paul starts off with theology, and then he moves to applied theology, which is where we really want to be anyway. And so if you look at that heading of chapter 3, which kind of marks that shift there of, you know, since then you've been raised with Christ, set your heart on things above where Jesus is, because you died and now your life is hidden in him. In part 3, we looked at how that just kind of plays out in our life in general, but then it like got really specific this week of like family code, family rules. How does this all work out? And so some really just simple statements directed to wives, husbands, and children, and fathers, and parents. But man, there's so much to just unpack there. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully it was helpful, maybe able to dispel a few misunderstandings of how these verses have been used in the past. And so, yeah, hopefully it was helpful.
Yeah, so I guess just for a recap, if you missed the sermon or if you're jumping into the podcast, just like, what in the world are they talking about? Colossians part 4. The verses were 18 through 21 of chapter 3. But I'm going to back up one verse and just read all those verses to catch us up. And then we'll talk a little bit through this. Starting in verse 17 from last week of chapter 3, it says, whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. And then I guess it's confusing in our NIV English Bibles because then it has like a heading.
Right.
Really, I mean, it's just the next verse, verse 18. So whatever you do, hey, wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. And then fathers, do not embitter your children or they will become discouraged. So let's just dive a little bit deeper. Just take each one of those, just wives, then husbands, then children. What is maybe a specific takeaway or that, Adam, you said, helping us clear up some misunderstandings, maybe remind us of what is an important reminder, misunderstanding that we'd want to steer clear of from the section about wives?
Well, I think it's funny, like, I don't know how many sermons, I know that I have, I think I've probably only touched on those verses once or twice in, you know, almost 14 years. And I don't remember a whole lot of them growing up either. And I've got a little bit of a suspicion that why we don't hear a whole lot of sermons on the topic is because most preachers are men. And and so it's just kind of like, you know. And but I think that the thing for me, and this is really for all of these verses, so we'll just throw it out on all of them, is as a blanket, those are verses written to the specific people in the family. Mm-hmm. In other words, The command in verse 18 is written to wives. It's not written to the husband. This is not, you know, Adam's job to continually point this out to Jennifer of, hey, you're supposed to be submitting to me. You know,
I thought that was incredible to bring out. It's important.
It's like, that's her verse, not mine. Mm-hmm. And the husband verse is my verse, not hers. And so I think that's part of the big misconception. But I also think what's really interesting is, you know, we read those verses and you just know, like, as a preacher, communicator, anytime you're using these verses, you know that there is going to be, like, to use our modern phrase, it's like a trigger alert.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, this is going to trigger some folks. But what's funny is, in the first century, these verses would have been triggering, but it would have been in a way that we wouldn't have thought. This would not have triggered wives in the first century.
Correct. Yeah.
This was just kind of understood. It was assumed. That's what it was. But for the really triggering verse, it's that second verse. It's the husband's love, because they're like, what do you mean I got to love her?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm large and in charge. And so I just think that's interesting. But so you go back to the wife verse, and it's just this idea of, we're not talking about inferiority. This is not to be used to justify abuse, which I've heard morons do.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know if that word's appropriate or not. That's just how
I'd say
I feel.
So. Yeah.
It's just this idea of, it's just to put your husband's interests ahead of your own. And whenever it comes to the husband, it's put your wife's interest, your wife's, not, that's a singular.
You just went Old Testament on us.
Yeah.
Moral wives, just possessive. Yeah. Your wife's.
Yes. Her needs ahead of your own, which in the end, it's like, I don't know. I think this is how I would say it. I really don't know how radical these verses are for Christians anyway, because it's kind of like that whole love your neighbor as yourself.
Right.
Put others
in. Yeah, or even Philippians 2, just talking about, you know, your attitude should be like Christ. Mm-hmm. And don't look out for your own interests, but rather the interests of others. And so whether you're a wife, a husband, a child, a brother, anything, it's others, 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 more than me, me, me.
Even that word, submit, like, you know, you talk about it. That's not the only time in the New Testament that's a command for a follower of Jesus, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Submit yourselves to the cross. Submit yourselves to the Lord. Even in the letter to Ephesians, which I kind of call like the distant cousin to Colossians, because Paul does a lot of the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Theology and then gets practical.
Yeah.
He makes a transition from theology to practice, and his line is, submit then to one another.
Yeah.
Like, as the body of Christ. So this word submission, there's nothing restrictive about it, but it actually, if you look at it through the entire truth of the gospel, it's actually through submission that you experience a lot of freedom.
Yeah.
And so there's that here for wives, is that through submission, and again, we're not talking like, you know, that traditional like obey and all that sort of stuff, but we're talking about just looking for the interests of your husband before your own interest. There's a lot of freedom to be found for yourself and in your relationship that way.
Yeah. So good to remember that, like Adam, you said earlier, those verses, like where it says wives, that's the wife verse. That's her verse that she reads.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, you know, coerce or make, you know, the other one do this. It's, what are you doing? How are you choosing to submit? How are you choosing to serve?
Yeah.
So, you know, thinking back on the whole sermon, Luke, was there anything that just kind of jumped out as a theme to you? Something super helpful?
Yeah, I think for me, I was encouraged by the sermon. Anytime that Paul spends a lot of time going theology, 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 and then bridging the gap from that to the way that we actually live out the truths of the gospel, I'm always so encouraged, because whenever we look at some of the things in the New Testament, sometimes I feel a little bit discouraged, because it seems like living the gospel way is sometimes out of reach.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, oh my goodness, there's so much that I need to get right, or all that sort of stuff. And of course, that's because in my flaws, I'm not anticipating or understanding or living from the grace that I've received. But it's like all of this theology he's given in chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, and then he gets practical to talk about relationships that all of us have.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's like this thing where it's like, I feel like sometimes when I look at my life in our cultural context, that living the gospel way, the way that it was intended to live, is out of reach. But what Paul actually does when he talks about wives and husbands and children and fathers and all that sort of stuff, it's timeless, man. Like, that is timeless stuff. And so even today, especially today, there's no difference in the fact that I can let the high view of who Christ is influence the way that I live as I interact with the people that are a part of my life. And so I think just any time the New Testament gets really practical and starts to talk about the relationships and how we can actually live out the truth of the gospel, I get really encouraged, because it, all of a sudden, it feels like it's not as far out of reach for me.
Yeah, it's pulling it out of the clouds and right. putting it on the ground. And, you know, like, because like we said at the beginning, we want to do applied theology. We want to put it into practice. We don't just want to learn a bunch of things and have it not affect our life, because that's weird.
Right.
You know, yeah. kind of useless. So it is. It's putting legs to it. And, you know, whether it's to the wife, you know, or the husband, which is just like, you love her because she needs to be loved.
Mm-hmm.
You take care of her. And, you know, one of the things I think is interesting, I reached out to a counselor, family counselor, friend, just saying, hey, what are some of your thoughts on Colossians 3? And it really didn't make it into the message, but I just thought it was really intriguing. Some of the stuff he was pointing out is, because he actually ties it back to not verse 17, but verse 15.
Okay.
Which is, let the peace of Christ yeah. rule in your hearts, and that families who do that well will, they will, you know, like, employ their individual roles to make that all work in the home.
That's good.
How do you make the peace of Christ rule in your home? Well, it's, you know, godly wives want a husband who is going to lead their families towards God's mission, you know, for their home. And so there's no excuse for power struggles with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, godly husbands want a household filled with peace, not chaos, no conflict. And so that, but that's no excuse for being harsh with their wife or their child or their children. You know, kids want two parents working together for the same thing. And so there's no excuse for rebellion or, you know, just being jerks.
No excuse for being the way that Luke was when he was.
Exactly.
Writing Scott on the wall.
Yeah. You know, fathers want kids who obey and who do things right, but there's no excuse to rob them of their hope or to exasperate them.
Right.
And so it all comes back to this idea of letting the peace of Christ rule in our hearts and rule in our homes. And it happens whenever we all take our role seriously and we play our part.
I think that's such a good reminder, because, you know, as I thought back through this message, something I wrote down is just a line you say in the message you said was, when you provide the other with what they need, they can become who they need to become.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, something we tell our kids, but really we need to hear it just as much, is like, you can't control how other people respond.
Correct.
But you are responsible for what you do. You are in control of your actions. And so I think that just applies to husbands, wives, children, all of it, that we need to not get caught up in the emotion or the reaction to what other people are doing. Stay above that.
Right.
And you're responsible for what you need to do to help bring out the other person, what, like, who they need to become. So, anything else about husbands, children, just takeaways you want to make sure we're clear on, Adam, Luke, before we move on to sort of application and how do we put legs to this?
Yeah, I mean, I really think that really was kind of just the big idea, is that we're trying to give the people in our home what they need so they can become who they need to become. And if everybody is doing that in the household, you know, then obviously everything is great. But what's beautiful about that is, even if not everybody is doing that in the household, you can actually influence and bring change into your home by giving people what they need, not necessarily what they deserve. And I think that's a huge thing to remember, because I know a lot of folks, you know, in our church may not have like everybody on the same page in the house whenever it comes to faith.
Right. Right.
And how do you help people through that? Well, don't give them what they deserve. Give them what they need. And what do they need? And that's where we kind of put some legs to it. And there's all kinds of things people mm-hmm. need, but, you know, yeah. we just kind of narrow it down to those three.
You could talk all day about what people need and what they've been created to receive and things like that. But
yeah, we could just stand there and read his needs, her needs.
the three that are kind of, that we're centered in on in the message, and that are just so good and important were encouragement, attention, and respect. So let's shift gears a little bit. And, you know, we always, like you said a moment ago, try to put legs to the message, try to get practical, try to live this out. So thinking through the members of your family or your home, how can we give encouragement? What are some practical ways or reminders, just practical ways we can do this or reminders as we try to encourage? So Luke, Adam?
First thing that pops into my mind is to, I think the first step, if you want to be really intentional about encouragement, is to find out how the people in your home actually like to receive it.
Yeah, I wrote that same thing down.
So
exactly.
Like, you know, thinking through things like the five love languages and stuff like that, like there might be people in your home who respond differently to gifts as opposed to words of encouragement, as opposed to acts of service, all that sort of stuff. And so I think that you've got to be a little bit of an exegete as far as your home goes. And
correct.
You got to draw out what does my wife really need from me if I'm going to encourage her? Or what does my husband really need from me if I'm going to encourage him? What do my kids really need if I'm going to encourage? And so once you've done the hard work of like trying to find out, well, maybe my, I don't know, my wife responds better to encouragement whenever it is, you know, a note of appreciation with, you know, a little candy bar or something like that. Like, she, you know, that's what it is. Now, specific to my home, Tristan feels encouraged by me whenever I take things off of her plate. So like acts of service.
Literally?
No.
Well, you do that too,
she
right?
She gets annoyed whenever I take actual things off of her plate. No, but like, you know, she's in PT school. And so a lot of her day-to-day stuff is wake up, go to school, which she's got to drive all the way out to Swanee for. And then it's come home and it's, oh my goodness, I've got, you know, three quizzes and a test and a project due tomorrow. And so it's homework. Right. And so it would be unfair for me to expect that she's going to cook and clean all of the time, you know, all that sort of stuff. And so one of the ways that I can encourage her is to like pack her lunchbox for the next day or do the dishes and all that sort of stuff. And I don't always do the best job because usually when I get home, I'm tired too, you know, all that sort of stuff. But I know like if I'm going to encourage, that is one of the ways in which she receives it the best. And so I've determined, okay, because I know my wife and what she needs, these are the things I'm going to do to encourage.
Yeah. Adam?
I think that, you know, with encouragement, I just think the word that always comes to mind for me is just be lavish. I have yet to meet somebody who has come to me and just said, I am just too many people are encouraging me. You know, if another person comes up and tells me how good of a job I'm doing or how much they love me, I'm just going to blow my top, you know? And so I think it's just be lavish. Give those kind words and encourage folks. And, you know, husbands and dads in the room or in the room, listening in the car, wherever yourself are. One of your job is to be, you know, your kids, your wife, their biggest fan.
Mm-hmm.
And, like one of the things I love about my dad is I can't get off the phone or, walk out of the room. It even feels like if we're in the same room, it's like, you know, son, I'm proud of you. And, you know, I think you're doing a great job and blah, 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 blah. And, those are important words to hear. So I think lavish is the word.
The weight of a father's words are huge.
Yeah.
Are so big. So
on both directions.
In both directions.
Right. Yeah. Negative and positive.
Yeah.
So, Adam, the proverb 12:25, you shared this, anxiety weighs down the heart, but a kind word cheers it up. And it got me thinking, do either one of you remember how many like positive words are needed to be said to outweigh a negative?
I can't remember.
You know, there's stats that go with that.
Off the top of my head, I think it's 10 to 1.
10 to 1?
I think it's 10 to 1.
Yeah. I don't know.
I was going to say 6 to 1. But
6 to 1. All we know is it's more positive that are needed than negative. So we might do some research right now while we're talking. But fathers especially and husbands just realize, man, you have some power in your words. And so something I'm trying to do better at in my life, in my current stage of parenting, 7 to 1.
7 to 1.
We just got confirmation from the Google.
That's right.
7 to 1. are the positive comments that are needed to outweigh just one negative one. So if your kids are at school or on the team and they're hearing negative, you need to be intentional about praising them, not falsely, but you know, in a real way. Catch them doing right. And that's what I was getting at a while ago. I'm trying to be better about this in my home, of just catching them doing something right. It's really easy to point out when they didn't quite brush their teeth correctly or didn't quite sweep the floor correctly. But man, just those opportunities to say, son, I'm so proud of you because you got up on time and got yourself completely ready without any help. I mean, the stage of parenting we're in right now, you can tell.
Yeah.
Or you did such a good job, but the way you asked that question was just, it's perfect. We've tried to teach you that and now you're doing it. So good job. And so catch them doing right. So.
Well, and even outside of the home context, which is kind of where Paul moves next after talking about the home and where we'll be wrapping up the series as well. But even in all of our relationships, so like even if you're not married, if you don't have children, mm-hmm. If you're in leadership of any capacity, if you have influence over anybody, it's always good to just remember people need encouraging words.
Yeah.
In a very negative culture, a positive word is an oasis, and it is so refreshing.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So I'm thinking about this. You know, like I have a drawer in my office that is chock full of just like notes of encouragement, words of encouragement that I have gotten from even all the way back to 2018 when I was just the summer intern here.
Uh-huh.
And
yep.
You know, like I saved those.
Yeah.
I did not, you know, save. Any sort of, you know, negative comment that was thrown my way. Like those are the things that you don't hold on to because those aren't the things that fill you. But everybody you know, has those cards that they turn to again and again and again, because they're just so full of encouraging. A kind word really does lift you up. And I think it's interesting too. Like, you know, I'm working with teenagers. And so anytime, you know, the Bible throws out the word anxiety, I'm paying attention because man, teenagers are struggling with mental health stuff. There's literally right here in this verse, this proverb that you threw out, there's literally a remedy for anxiousness.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And it's not a remedy that, you know, someone who might struggle with anxiety can actually provide on their own. They can, like, encourage themselves, speak to themselves, all that sort of stuff. But it just goes to show, like, aside from, you know, the topic we're having, but if someone's struggling with anxiety, you've got to get yourself a part of a community that's going to encourage you, because that's what actually lifts you up.
Right.
Yeah. 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 The second application point yesterday was attention. And I love that we can say, you know, you pay attention. It's valuable. You pay
right.
it. It's valuable enough that you pay it. So just let's talk about that for a little bit. How can we do that practically, giving our family or, you know, people at work, you know, attention that they need?
I think one thing, and it's interesting, you know, and just because I've been doing a lot of it lately, just doing premarital counseling stuff, and one of the things is they kind of tattle on themselves whenever it comes to things that they want to improve.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they only get to pick three in the stuff that we use. But what's hilarious is almost every single time, there's always at least one of them, if not both of them, that one of them is, I'm too distracted by my phone.
Yeah.
And so I think learning to put that away.
Mm-hmm.
Set it down, put it in another room, whatever it is that you need to do. I think that's a huge one in our day and age. You know, what do we want I think about this, what do I want my grandchildren that maybe we have someday?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do I want them to remember me? And do I want them to remember me just sitting there playing
right.
on my phone the entire yeah. time while they're there? Or do I want to remember me, like I remember my Grandma Turner and Grandpa Turner getting down on the floor and
uh-huh.
and
yeah.
playing cars and those things yeah. with us. And so I think that's probably one of the most practical things we can do is just learn to set aside, you know, the number of screens, which is ironic because right now because we're doing this right now, I have like three in front of me. And but you know, I think that's part of it is just learning to say no to those things.
Yeah.
We don't have to be connected all the time.
You don't. And, you know, I shared, I think, the stat last week about what the teenagers do with screens.
Teenagers spend
7 hours, 22 minutes a day on screens. the thing that might surprise a lot of people is that if you try to kind of streamline that statistic for like adults and parents, it's not that much different.
Yeah, right.
It really isn't, because it just looks different, right? So
yes.
So the teenagers, everybody freaks out because they're spending their screen time on YouTube and playing video games.
Right.
And so everybody's like, well, that's dangerous. But you know what you do just as much is you've got the news on.
Yeah, or your email
or you're watching the game or your email. Like, you spend just as much time on the screens too. And like, it gets to the point where I think we've talked about this before, maybe a couple years ago in sermons or something like that. But it gets to the point to where you're home with your family and the kids are on their phones or on their video games and the parents are watching some sort of something on TV. And it's like you guys are both desiring to have conversations with each other, but you just don't. Because you're like ships passing by in the middle of the night. You just, you know, do your screen, put the screen away and give some attention and all that sort of stuff. It's just so important. There's a book that I'd recommend just in regards to this context. It's called TechWise Family. I think that you can check that one out in our Next Steps resource room if you're here on Sunday morning.
Andy Crouch,
Andy Crouch, really, really great book, just that kind of gives some practical ideas about how your family can navigate screens a little bit better in order to get this right as far as attention goes.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, I don't need to say it again. We've both said it already about screens. But yeah, find some way to pay focused attention. And so if it's a screen or if it's – I know for me, sometimes I have an expectation of what I want to get accomplished. Maybe it's things around the house that need to get – cleaned up because we got a guest coming over, or maybe it's a little project that I want to get done. I'm building something or whatnot. I think it's really important for me when my kids need me or in those certain hours to just drop that to-do list and be available. And so to use an old term, just to be fully present. So
undivided attention.
It could be screens. It could be, you know, it could be something else, but yeah. We got to do better. Finally, we talked about respect, and so let's just ask the same question: How do we show respect practically? What are some kind of rubber hits the road ideas we got? We don't have all of them for sure, but we can talk about a few. So,
I think you know, like some of the vocabulary. I think this is in some ways it's a synonym, but like for husband to a wife, I think respecting looks like cherishing.
Mm-hmm.
One way I kind of think of like respect is like, what's the end goal? And it's, you want them to flourish. You want them to grow.
Yeah.
And so for generally speaking, you know, stereotypes are stereotypes, you know, because they're stereotypes, but generally speaking, you know, a woman, a wife looks to be cherished. A husband looks to be respected, and they're kind of the same coin, just two different sides of it.
Yep.
And so cherish, take however much you think she needs to be cherished, multiply it by about 15 and then take it times 1,000. And now we're where we need to be, you know, and just never should be a question, but it's noticing, regarding, honoring, deferring to, loving, admiring, those things. And then I think for our ladies who might be listening, I think I would just continue to just hammer home this idea. You have no idea how much power you have when it comes to your husband.
Mm-hmm.
He will either rise or fall to the level that you respect him, and you can build him up and really help make a transformation take place in him. You have the power to help him become who God created him to be.
I remember years ago, I saw this sign and it said, "Behind every great man is a woman." Rolling her eyes. and so obviously there's power in that as a wife to, like you said, Adam, to build up your husband or to tear him down. And while a husband and a father, your words are so weighty for a wife and your children, wives, you're very powerful as well. So what'd you say, Luke?
I think a couple of things come to mind. Respect, find out what it means to me. And just take a page from Aretha Franklin.
Yeah, there you go.
Or something like that. But I think it's just kind of cool that respect kind of was the bottom line of those three, right? Uh-huh. Because yeah. kind of the way that I think about it is that if you do encouragement and attention well, then those are actions that reveal a posture of respect towards the other person. And so yeah. I think that's just like a way that you can respect is to get the other two right. To encourage and to pay attention, all that good stuff. But then too, like from the husband's perspective, I think we've talked about it before. Back when we were doing the Lead Like Jesus stuff, talking about leading in the home is like, men are just really insecure, you know, and we care about what other people think of us publicly, to a fault sometimes, you know, that being said, I know that I am being respected whenever I am being talked about in a positive way around others.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And if I have the slightest hunch that, you know, that there's a bunch of complaining about me going on, mm-hmm. that makes me feel not very good. Now, I'm not ever accusing my wife of doing that. That has never happened before. At least to my knowledge. But like, I know that I am loved, cherished, and respected by Tristan whenever she brags about me publicly. Like, just like that's yeah. whenever I know, oh man, like she actually really, honors and respects me as a husband and as a minister and all that sort of stuff. So I think that is what I've got there.
Yeah. Respect. It's something that it really can just be applied to everything, like you said. In fact, in our home, we have a sign up that just says the rule of the house is respect, you know? And so we get to funnel everything through that, you know. Was that the way you answered that question? Was it respectful? Was it putting the other person, was it showing love to that other person or lifting them up, or the way you obeyed, you know? True obedience is, you know, right away, all the way, with a good attitude. So did you respectfully obey, or did you, you know, bang your stuff around and say, oh, this is so stupid, you know, like, that's not respectful. I mean, you didn't really truly obey. So
I think that this is so key too, because so you say that and it makes me think of CLC as well. So
absolutely,
the rules in CLC is respect, and it's going to be, we're going to respect authority, God and his word, the facilities and the bust. And we're going to respect each other. And one of the things at the beginning of the year that I told my CLC students was, and like, I'm going to throw an additional one on here from me to you. Like, I'm going to respect you.
Absolutely.
Too. Yep. But you've got to understand that there is some, like, I am the authority of the classroom.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to respect you because I believe in you and I think you guys are awesome, but it's going to be to the level in which you respect me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, so.
Or
so
the level in which you allow me to
allow me.
You.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. So like, you know, this word respect, and to think through Colossians, and it hits the relationship between the husband and the wife for sure, but it also hits the relationship between parents and kids. Like, what would it look like for it? And I'm asking you guys, because I don't know, because I'm not a parent, but like, you know, you desire to be respected by your kids, but what does it look like for you to use wisdom and discernment to respect your kids?
I think that changes as they age and they mature.
Sure.
You know, the older they get, the more you include them on, you know, discussions, decisions, and allowing them to have a little bit of a say and freedom, you know. And, you know, whenever they're kids, there's a lot of little kids, there's a lot of, why do I have to do this? Well, because I said so.
Yeah.
You know, this is not up for debate or discussion. But then as they do get older, it's just like, hey, yo, you know, you are a young adult now, whether we like it or not, kids mature a whole lot faster than what they used to. And so there's a lot more capacity and a lot more that they're dealing with at younger ages that pushes them further down the line. And so it's just learning to be able to weigh those things. And you got to know your kid. Every kid is different. One may have far more capacity than the other.
I think that's huge to say, know your kid, because just like earlier we said, you want to kind of study them and exegete them, to use that Bible word you did. You got to do the same thing with how are they going to feel respected? How are you going to connect with them in a way that they do feel respected? And something we've been doing lately too is just telling our kids, you can ask anything you want to ask. We can talk about anything as long as it's respectful, because once again, to get back at like, I'm going to respect you as much as you allow me to respect you. If we're having a respectful conversation, man, we can talk all day long. But the moment you start to act out of bounds, like, I can't really respect you as much as I want to. And I do maybe have to step in with just parental authority.
Right.
And provide discipline in a different way or something. And mm-hmm. that's another topic for another day, of course. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, my oldest is only 8, so I'm still in the little kid range, kind of right. transitioning to, Naya is definitely starting that transition of just bigger kid type right. stuff for sure. But anyway, let's wrap up with just, I love this bottom line thought. It's a challenging thought, really. Do those outside your home see Christ inside your home?
Mm-hmm.
So, man, I love that. And then a challenge along with it was just give what's needed. So, Adam, remind us kind of what that means to give what's needed.
Yeah, it's the whole idea of respect, attention, encouragement. No one knows your family better than you do.
Mm-hmm.
No one knows your you know, role at work, your employees. Nobody knows your team better than you do. So what does that person need? Maybe it's somebody who's annoying the snot out of you right now. Mm-hmm. You know, what do they need? You know, give it to them. How can you show them some respect? How can you show some attention? How can you give them some encouragement? Maybe it's somebody that you just really admire. You know, same thing. You know, what do they need? And so what's one specific way that you can do that this week? And we're not talking like, you know, do it for 13 hours in one day of just encouraging comments. Yeah. Like, how can you take 5 minutes this week
uh-huh.
and encourage one person or give attention to one person or show respect to one person?
Yeah, and I love the language that was all throughout the sermon, just give what's needed, not what they deserve.
Right.
Because that's the gospel again. We have been given what we don't deserve.
Correct.
And so if we have been given that, we're going to try to live it. So Luke, how would you take just that challenge and the bottom line and give a leadership challenge to our listeners today?
I love the bottom line. Do those outside your home see Christ inside your home? And I think that if you think about it, like, give what's needed in more of a missional context, like, your neighbors need to see that, right?
I like that perspective too. Yeah.
Your uh-huh. neighbors need mm-hmm. to see that. And so, you know, Adam, I know that one of the things you said yesterday as you were kind of talking through bottom line and challenges that, like, you really are a sermon to your neighbors.
Right.
And I know,
yeah.
like,
yeah.
Tristan and I, we pray regularly that our marriage would be a good representation of the gospel to those mm-hmm. who are in our circles. Because if you read Ephesians 5, even it's there in Colossians as well, like, that's what the marriage relationship is. It is a spitting image of what Christ has done for the church. And so we understand that, and we want to make sure that the way that we treat each other and honor each other and encourage each other and respect each mm-hmm. other is a spitting image of the gospel of Jesus Christ, so that those who are in our circles can see that. And so give what's needed. Sure, do the 5 minute thing, absolutely, for those that are in your house, but also understand, like, for some of the people in your circles, what they need is to see you get this right and to see Christ inside your home as they look in from the outside.
Yeah. Good. That's awesome. Thanks, guys. Here's my challenge, talking about just taking 5 minutes or whatever, just a little thing that you can do. Here's just a practical idea. Gather around the dinner table this week, put a number to it. I don't know what your schedule is. I just wrote down 3. So try to get around the table at least 3 times with your family this week, and just make it your goal to only ask questions about other people and put them in the spotlight and ask them, you know, whatever your kid's season of life is or your season of life is. Obviously apply that to what it needs to be. But man, just make it fun and ask a ton of questions. That's my challenge. So
yeah, and I'll say this too. If you this is just a moment to brag on our friend Josh here. If you need ideas for how to get your family around a table, talk to this man on Sunday morning, because, man, we were hanging out with your younger daughter, Rosie, the other day, and she was talking about how she loves ballet. So on Tuesday
nights,
she gets to go to ballet, and I guess she was explaining to us in the best way that she could for y'all's schedule on Tuesday, with ballet, that means that Sasha and Naya and Rosie are out having dinner together, and you know, the Dominic and Dad and Josh are out, you know, together having dinner. And Rosie said to Tristan and I, she was like, "I love that I get to do ballet, but sometimes it does make me sad because that means we don't get to have a whole family dinner."
Whenever she said that,
I was like, "Do you like having dinner at the table with your family?" And she just said yes. So to all of you parents, like, hear us say this, like, get your family around a table and have some dinner. If you need ideas about that, talk to the dude that's sitting on my left right now. He's doing it really well.
And really, that's something that my parents instilled in me, just talking about family, you know. We tried to do that very frequently growing up. And then there got a time where in high school, Megan and I, when we weren't kicking each other in the face, we were both playing sports very busily in the afternoons and evenings, soccer, volleyball, track, all that sort of stuff. So my mom is just awesome. She had hot breakfasts on the table most mornings, like at least 3 a week. And that's not to make anybody feel bad. You don't have to do that.
Right.
But it was just my point of saying that is it was very important to them, my mom and dad, to get us around a table. So anyway, I come by that naturally, but it's because of them. So let's have a little fun today as we wrap up. We're going to play a game. So what you all can't see, listeners, is there is a button on our table, and it looks like the Staples button that says, you know, that was easy. But this one just says no. It's like a no button.
I'm gonna hit it and see if it picks up in the microphone.
No.
A little bit there. So the button is, it's going to be a race for Luke and Adam. We're going to play a game here. And based upon just our discussion today all about family, this is a game that's been around since the 70s. Do you have any guesses what game it is?
Since the 70s?
We playing the feud?
We are playing the family feud. So, all right,
everybody.
I don't know that I'm going to do my best Steve Harvey impression, but anyway, I'm going to turn my screen so you can't see the answers over here. And just for those of you that might not know, the rules are I'm going to ask the question. The first one to buzz in gets the control of the board. And if they answer all of the responses that were given, there's a total of 100, you know, people that were polled, and these answers are based upon how many people answered those answers and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, if you keep control of the board while always answering correctly and you win it, you win that round. If you get 3 strikes, then the control goes to you, the other person representing their whole family. And anyway,
if they don't know how Family Feud works,
I was about to say,
we can't help them.
Yeah,
there you go.
Help them out.
There you go. Enough talking. All right, here is the first question. First person to buzz in gets control of the board. Name foods that go with peanut butter. Ooh, Adam has control of the board. Name a food that
he
goes
went
with
after
peanut
it,
butter.
Man.
That's right. Well, I mean,
I understand why your brother just hit you in the back of the head.
Slap that, man.
So the foods that go with peanut butter?
Peanut butter.
Jelly.
Jelly is the number one answer.
There we go.
43 responses, and so you do have control of the board. Luke doesn't even get a chance to try to steal that one.
Right,
there are.
Okay. I don't like peanut butter anyway.
On my list, I have.
How many are there?
There are 6 total.
6 total.
So there's 5 more that were given. Yeah.
So, marshmallow cream.
Ooh, unfortunately, not on this one.
Let's go.
Okay.
Okay.
Honey.
You got 2 more.
Honey.
No, not on this list either.
Holy moly. What are these people doing?
I like the way this is going.
Foods that go with peanut butter.
All right. Well, then let's try this. Bread.
Bread is not on the list.
Holy cow.
Okay. Right. So, Luke,
you steal with just one answer, right?
You can steal, but how does it work? Don't you have to finish the board?
No.
You only
have to get
one answer.
One answer.
And I'm good. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah,
so we're going to just go.
Foods that go with peanut butter.
Chocolate.
Chocolate is the number 2 answer at 27. 27, out of the total. So the other on this list that I looked up were bananas, which I love
like
a peanut butter banana sandwich.
Fine.
Oreos, oats.
What?
Celery.
Okay, ants on a log.
I know, right? Ants on a log, yeah.
Whatever. Every time I watch Family Feud, some of those answers that they give, like, I
They're
always
weird,
wonder,
right?
What 100 people are they
Correct.
Grabbing
exactly.
and
yeah.
asking these
so,
questions? This is weird.
So, I mean, the hot take could definitely be, are these the right 6 answers? And
no.
The answer is no.
Not even close.
No.
Yeah, because
I mean,
marshmallow cream.
I should have got chocolate.
Chocolate, jelly,
Chocolate, probably, because a Reese's is pretty popular. But
celery? Who celery actually enjoys
it? Well, it's on a log.
No, but
No,
it's not.
Yeah, it's fine.
Who celery literally is nothing, right? Like, it's negative. It takes more calories to consume celery than in it.
You don't even like peanut butter. You don't get to talk.
I like celery a lot.
Stop.
Celery is good.
So the first, we have four questions, but it's the first of two wins. So anyway.
Okay.
So
okay.
Luke, you're up 1-0, and so you could win this next round.
So we could also tie.
It's the first to two wins, though. So first to two.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So name things you bring on a camping trip. That was Luke that time. All right.
That's me. Okay. Things you bring.
Things you bring on a camping trip.
How many are there?
Well,
is it tent? Tent is going to be
tent
up there.
Tent is another, so number one answer at 36. Okay. So you have control of the board. So there are actually seven answers that were submitted on this survey. So you have several chances here.
Okay. Sleeping bag.
Sleeping bag is number two answer.
I'm gonna go with like fire starter stuff.
Ooh, like, probably should be, but that's not on this list.
That's not on that one.
Yes, love it.
Okay, so there's an X. So I've got
strike.
Two.
You got two strikes left. Yeah.
Man, this is actually kind of more difficult than I anticipated. Try to get seven. I'm not. I love to camp, but I haven't been in a long time, so I don't know what.
When I asked Sasha this question last night, she goes, "Your hotel key card."
There you go. That's funny. Yeah. I'm gonna say, I mean, like, I think whenever I camp, I like to hike, so I'm gonna maybe say like a map.
A map. A compass is on there.
Compass,
I'll give you that. Okay,
they would do that on the show. Yeah.
Or nowadays, all trails GPS.
All
app
trails
or
GPS.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so compass.
Your iPhone.
That's the last answer. Only five, though.
Okay. I would think your food.
Food at 11. Yes, okay. You got four of them. You're missing three.
Okay. Let's go like water bottle.
Man. Once again, hot take. It's not on here, though.
Not
strike
on
two.
You are going to die of dehydration on that camping trip. So I've got three left and two strikes.
Correct.
Okay. I'm going to say a flashlight. Oh, come on.
Right.
That is
right,
ridiculous. That's got to be on there.
Okay.
See if you can steal it.
Yeah, I don't know. There's going to have to be, and I don't know what to call it, though. This is the problem.
All right. So we wrap, like, remind everybody, Luke said tent, sleeping bag, food and compass.
Right. And so, like, what I'm going at, and I don't know if I'm going to use the right word, so you might end up winning this, but it's like, you got to have something to cook your food in. And so it's got to be something of the longs, like a cooking utensil.
A cooking utensil. No.
There it is.
It's not on my list.
There it is.
So you won won by default, basically.
Yeah. There it is.
By default.
I stole,
yeah.
So
the two greatest words in American language, default.
Ooh, wow. The other's on my list.
If you ask Tom Brady, it's deflate.
There you go. Ooh, hot take.
Yeah, there's a hot take.
The others on my list that I had here were a backpack. Toilet paper.
Toilet paper? What kind of camping trip are you going
exactly.
on?
And bug spray or sunscreen. So.
Okay. I get the bug spray.
I know.
I get the bug spray.
No, how are you going to cook your food?
How are you going to cook
it? You can't, I guess.
You're going to dive?
I think that, again, the 100 people they're asking these questions to, they are probably, whenever they say food, they are meaning food, water, and everything.
That doesn't.
And everything in order.
That doesn't
to
count. Yeah. That's not. That's not how that works.
You know, okay. There you go. There are faults in the way that Family Feud is done.
Sure.
Hey, if you want a good time, and this is after you have already paid attention to your family for the night, YouTube Family Feud bloopers.
Oh yeah.
Those are fun.
Absolutely.
Whenever people give wrong answers, just there was one time it's like name a animal with a three letters in their name, and one guy goes alligator.
Exactly.
What are you talking about?
Oh man. Well, hey guys, thanks for playing, and we are out of time for today, but as always, we hope it's been just a lot of fun, encouraging, challenging to think through how your faith is just getting legs in your family, walking through the life that you have with your wife, your husband, your kids, your brother and sister, how you're just kind of real life living the faith. Really, remember the theme of Colossians is Christ is supreme. And so he is more than you can imagine. He's all that you need. And so let's go live that this week with our family. Let's be very intentional to encourage to pay attention, to show respect. And man, we're in your corner. We're for you, and so glad that you're a part of Corinth. So we look forward to seeing you Sunday for another part of Colossians and next Monday in Corinth in your car. Thanks again, and have a wonderful week. We'll see you.